Hi, and welcome to the Workforce Management Show. My name is Johanna Fagerstedt, and I'm the CMO at Quinyx. I'm very excited about today's guest, who is someone who knows the ins and outs of the highly competitive world of Formula One. A warm welcome, Mark Gallagher.
Great to be here with you, Johanna.
Great. So, Mark, you've got 30 years' experience in Formula One and was on the management board of the race-winning Jordan Grand Prix team. You've been a part of Red Bull Racing's management team, and you've served as a motorsport expert for Disney Pixar when creating Cars, which is actually my son's favorite movie. And you also helped Netflix create the very popular series Drive to Survive, a favorite of mine as well. And on top of that, you're an analyst and commentator for BBC, Sky Sport News, and CNN, among other things. Wow.
Yeah, that's quite a lot to have fitted in, but I have done that over a long period of time. But it's been a fascinating career, and one I'm very happy to have been able to enjoy in the sport that I love. So great to be part of the show today. Looking forward to talking to you.
Welcome. And as a part of the Workforce Management Show, we start every episode with some quick warm-up questions. So are you ready?
Yeah, sure. Fire away.
All right. Where are you from?
I'm from Ireland. I'm from Northern Ireland.
Ah, right. And what's your current role?
So I run a consulting business in Formula One. I work with a number of Formula One drivers, teams, sponsors, and also with corporate clients. So quite a broad range of clients that I work with. And that's I've been running that business for 8 years.
And your biggest achievement, according to yourself?
Wow, my biggest achievement. Well, personally, having two very healthy and I think beautiful and clever kids. But professionally, no question about it, that my biggest achievement is winning in Formula One with a talented group of colleagues who all started out on a journey and then saw it materialize into being the best in the world. Because when you win even one Formula One race, on that day, you are the best in the world. So that's been the thing that I am most satisfied about.
Yeah, wow. We'll speak more about that for sure today. When do you enjoy work the most?
I enjoy work the most when I can measure the outcome and can see the contribution that I've made. Formula One is all about making a difference. And I love the fact that in our business, we create something and you can measure the outcome. And I love that. I love being able to see what the outcome is, measure it, and know that I've contributed to that.
What makes a good leader?
Oh, communication, without a question. Just communicate. Everyone has to be on the same page, on the journey, know what the goal is.
Mm. And could you name one key ingredient to create a happy workforce?
Oh, yeah, recognition. Tell people how good they are. Say well done. Someone told me once the two most important words in the English language are the words well done, because when you say well done to a friend or colleague you work with, it makes them another meter taller. They love getting people love recognition, and it makes such a difference in a team.
And your motto in life?
My motto. My motto in life is just turn up. I know that seems a strange thing to say, just turn up, but it's amazing how many people just don't turn up. You know, when I mean turn up, I mean for your colleagues, for your customers, for that meeting, particularly for that difficult meeting, just turn up and deliver. And I think so much of what I reflect on in my career has been about turning up and going for it. And too many people don't do that. And then they wonder why they never quite succeeded. You got to be there, and you've got to be there and prepared to be scrutinized. But you know, that's part of life. You just got to go for it. So just turn up.
Love it. Just turn up. Great advice. So if you were to pick your top three favorite KPIs or metrics, what would those be and why?
Wow. Okay. So my top three KPIs would be, first of all, continuous improvement. It doesn't matter what it is. Let's measure something and see how much we're improving. in Formula One, we like seeing how much we improve every lap. So like about every 1 minute, 30 seconds, we see how much we have improved. But that's something therefore that goes through our whole business is measure how you're improving. That's so important. Then there is benchmarking yourself against the competition. Because I've seen some amazing teams in Formula One fail because they measured everything internally. So they kept telling themselves they were doing a great job. We're doing such a great job. But there's no point doing a great job if the competition are 2% in front of you the whole time. So benchmark yourself against the competition and don't be afraid of that, because every industry is competitive. So you got to see what the other guys are doing and make sure you're staying ahead of them. And then the final thing is kind of a slightly weird one, which is that I'm a huge believer in measuring the consistency of delivery. So the reliability of the outcome. Because again, there's no point in being brilliant one day and rubbish the next. You've got to keep that consistent delivery. So we get quite worried when we see just isolated great performances. We don't want isolated performances. We want continuous performance. And that's kind of related to my first point about continuous improvement. But we've got to get better. We've got to stay ahead of the competition. And we've got to do so consistently. So those are my three that I think are really worthwhile focusing on.
Exciting and great points. And I came to think about that Drive to Survive episode that I watched yesterday when when Ricardo in the Renault team said it doesn't matter that Racing Point might have a better car and we protested against it, we're still behind. So we need to really to improve our performance. It doesn't matter. We need to be better. So it seems like it's that kind of atmosphere within the Formula One community. Is that something that you recognize?
Yeah, totally. I mean, so the great thing about sport anyway is that it doesn't matter what sport you love, the results are totally measurable. And you win or you lose, it's, you know, it's 1-0 or it's whatever the score is, it's there and everyone can see it. The opposition can see it, you can see it, the public can see it, the media can see it. So this transparency over results is really is a great driving force within sport. Within Formula One, what makes it a little bit different is that for us to compete, we have to create this big technology project, which happens to be a Formula One car. So Daniel talking about the fact that, you know, there's like some politics going on. The politics doesn't matter. If the competition are beating you, they're beating you. They've got a better product. The team's done a better job because we've all got the same regulations. We all have amazing technology. Everyone in Formula One has a beautiful factory with all these shiny tools and equipment. So when you're being beaten, it simply means that the other group of people are doing a better job than you. And you have to recognize that.
Really good point. And so who's the best Formula One driver of all times?
Oh, I hate that question. You know, the thing is, Joanna, that our sport is 71 years old, and if you compare the job of a driver in the 1950s to the job of a driver today, it's a completely different profession. Because, I mean, let's take a slightly negative topic. Back in those days, drivers didn't survive. You know, they didn't survive. So, I've talked to some drivers from the 50s and 60s during my career. Typically, their careers lasted about 4 or 5 years, and either you retired or something terrible happened to you. So that's a big change. Today, you can easily have a career in Formula One for up to 20 years. You know, Michael Schumacher was in Formula One for 19 years. So really, it's changed a lot, and the technology has changed. And quite honestly, the drivers today are multitasking like you cannot believe, because they're not just driving the car, they're talking to their engineer, they're operating all this functionality and applications. I mean, it's like, it's no wonder that we have a generation of drivers now who've grown up playing computer games, because, you know, we've all seen our kids sitting in front of a computer screen with the console. They don't even look down at the console. They're just multitasking. They're just going to the next level. And that's what Formula One drivers are doing today. So it's really changed out of all recognition. So I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not going to be drawn on which driver is the best of all time, because I don't think you can actually say that. But what we can say is that of the current era, it's Lewis Hamilton. That's not really rocket science, because he's won 7 world championships. So I think his results speak for themselves. And the driver during my career, who I loved working with and just had a really great sense of special person as well as a talent, was Michael Schumacher, no question. I have huge respect for him as a guy and what he achieved in our sport and the way he led a team of people.
Yeah, interesting. So, and that, I mean, having a driver to be able to have a career for 20 years as compared to 4 to 5 years, that's continuous improvement of, anything, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the risk management, I mean, risk, if you talk about safety in Formula One as risk management, and all businesses have to deal with risk in some way, shape or form, we've learned how to manage risk really well. And the reason we've learned how to manage risk is we have the data. So as we have grown to become a data-driven sport, that connected environment means that we actually have the analytics that helps us to avoid catastrophic outcomes. So we don't wait for something to go wrong. We stop that event happening. So it's amazing when I think about the fact that Lewis Hamilton, in the last 4 years, his car has suffered one minor technical problem.
Done Mercedes, right?
I mean, that's well done Mercedes, but actually that's quite common now within Formula One. Now, I don't know what kind of car you drive, but I haven't had a car that has only had one small problem in 4 years. So to have a Formula One car that's at the pinnacle of performance, it's an exceptional outcome. And so that reliability and the robustness of the technology is down to the way we have used this connected world, this digital world that we operate in. And so it's I'm a great believer that human performance has been unlocked by the fact that we have these digital technologies that just help us to do things so much better than we used to do.
Great. And if you were to pick Christian Horner or Toto Wolff?
great question. So Christian Horner, boss of Red Bull Racing, super guy, really great personality. He's the guy you want to have dinner with, go for drinks after the race. I mean, of course, Red Bull, you know, they have good parties. Christian, great for socializing. The guy that I would love to work with is Toto Wolff. I think he's quite a visionary leader. He has learned on an individual basis. Here's the thing about Toto Wolff. I'm going to go off on a tangent. So here's the thing about Toto. He has never run a team of the size of Mercedes-Benz. He's never run a company with a large number of employees. Actually, this is his first job, running a business with this number of employees and this level of complexity. And I watched an interview with him last year, and the interviewer said to him, you know, what have you learned from like the bosses that you have worked for over the years? And Toto said, I've never had a boss. I left university, started my own, business investment company. I've never worked for anyone. I've never had any leadership training, and yet he's the most amazing leader. So the thing that I discovered about Toto is that he may not have had formal training, but he is an avid reader, and he reads business books and books of all kinds of descriptions every week. He just absorbs information, and he has realized that the magic to Formula One is not the technology, it's the people. It's the way that you employ a group of talented people and you give each person the opportunity to be the best version of themselves, so that everyone who works for that team is given the opportunity to be brilliant. And he does that in so many ways to create that environment. He's a very inspirational guy, very smart, very good-looking guy. He got a great family. Toto's a pretty special person, and everyone at Mercedes-Benz knows that they're working for someone who has helped that team. He has really led that team to being world champions.
It's very impressive. We got a question here from a French participant. What about Cyril? I don't know.
Yeah. Sorry, what's the question?
So what about Cyril at Renault?
Oh, Cyril. Okay, so we're talking about Cyril Abiteboul, who was the boss of the Renault Formula One team. And he has now left the company during the winter, which is a shock because he's a very passionate guy. He put a lot of effort into building that team and leading it. But I think there's a kind of interesting lesson there about, you know, we're going to talk a lot about people in this session. Renault as a group has gone through a very turbulent couple of years. They had quite a scandal at the top of the company. They had a new chief executive come in. Actually, they had an interim chief executive. Then they had a new chief executive, Luca de Meo, appointed last summer. And Luca is a very talented Italian guy, and he has a vision for Renault Group, which includes the fact that he really needs the Formula One team to win. And he has set a very robust target for Renault in Formula One. They've rebranded the team around their Alpine sports car brand. And the reason I'm telling you all of this is that for the person asking the question, the change of role has happened because the senior leadership in the group really need the team to win, and they wanted a different structure. And it was not a structure that Cyril wanted to work in. So essentially what they've done is they've created a two-person leadership team. So they now have a technical leader and a sporting leader. So they've divided that role. And that might seem like a mistake, because I just talked about Toto Wolff as a great leader of Mercedes-Benz, but actually inside Mercedes-Benz, Toto doesn't get involved in the technical side. So he has a chief technology officer. So Mercedes-Benz really have this combination of a people leader and a technology leader. And that's how Mercedes operates. Red Bull is the same. Christian Horner is the team boss. He's the chief executive. The chief technology officer is Adrian Newey. So actually, if you look at the successful teams in Formula One, there is a division of responsibilities. And I think Alpine and Renault decided, we want to do that. We want to replicate that structure. And that, I don't think that's one that Cyril wanted to work in. So he has departed the company. And they've replaced him with, but they have changed that structure so that there is now a chief technology officer, Marcin Budkowski, and an Italian guy, David Brivio, who's running the human side, the team side. And it's going to be interesting to see how they get on. For a company like Renault, they're spending a lot of money on Formula One. It's a very high-profile engagement. They've been struggling to win. They haven't won in this current era of Formula One. And actually, they've not even been beating their main customer team. So they supply engines to other teams. They've not even been able to beat their customer teams. So I think that's generated a question mark. And they're pushing hard now to move forward. And this really illustrates the degree to which in our industry you are measured constantly on basis of your performance. And if over time you're not winning, something has to change. You cannot just keep repeating failure.
Yeah. Same as in businesses, right?
Yeah, completely.
So back to Toto Wolff and his key to success. You said that the magic to Formula One, it's all about people.
Yeah.
How do you create engagement in a huge team like a Formula One team? Because there's so many people involved.
Yeah. Let me tell you about Mercedes-Benz a little bit, because it's quite an unusual team. So they So their factory is about 4 kilometers from where I live in outside Oxford in England. And they employ over 1,000 people in that factory. And that factory designs and manufactures the Formula One cars, but it does not manufacture the engine. The engine for the car is made in another Mercedes-Benz factory about 30 kilometers away. And that factory employs another 1,000 people. So they have 2,000 people in the Mercedes-Benz Formula One operation. Now, before all your colleagues think, wow, that's crazy, the people who make the engines, they actually also make the engines for lots of other Mercedes projects. So it's not just for Formula One. But my point is that if you look at the total number of people, it's at 2,000 people engaged in this program. So really quite a big organization for a sports team. The engagement is driven from the moment you join the team. And this is the same at Red Bull, and it's the same at other competitive teams. When you join the team, you're not just an employee. You are now a valued member of a team which has a really ambitious goal to achieve. And from the beginning, you and your department and your department leader are working cross-functionally around the organization in a very networked way. So when you join a Formula One team, you don't disappear down some big hole into your department or your division. You actually have this very unified communication around the organization so that everyone knows where we are, how we're doing, what are the problems, how do we meet the challenges. So I mentioned communication is a key aspect of leadership. Communication across the business is so key, so that no one feels like they're being left out. Everyone is included in the journey. And the way in which they drive this, I'm going to give you two examples, Joanna. First of all, during a Formula One weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, for example, this weekend we have our first race of the season in Bahrain. During those 4 days, the team, senior stakeholders in the team, they meet twice a day. And those meetings involve about 30 or 40 people. And they meet for about an hour, hour and a half in the morning. And in the morning, they talk about how are we going to run today? How are we going to run the activities today? And then about 12 hours later, they have the same meeting, but this time they're reviewing what happened. So the first meeting is like the pre-meeting, and the second meeting is like the after meeting. And we have those every day. So
it's like a stand-up and a retrospect, basically, what we say in the software world.
Yeah. And, you know, someone said to me at a recent conference, you know, why do they have two meetings a day? Why don't they have them in the morning meeting? They talk about what happened yesterday. Well, there's lots of reasons for that. One of the main reasons is that our business moves so quickly that we can actually get the people back at the factory to support us overnight if we need to bring some upgrade or development or fix the problem. So there's an immediacy. The other thing is that what we find within a high-performance team in Formula One is that if people are really emotional about something, if you've had a bad afternoon, if things have really not gone well, we don't want people to calm down tomorrow and then have a meeting where they say, oh, it doesn't really matter. We actually want them to come into a meeting full of passion and say, you know, today has been really a disaster. And, you know, this morning we said we had brought an upgrade on the software, and the software upgrade doesn't really work very well. Why has that happened? Can we get the person on the conference call from Europe? And this is all about driving, using our environment to drive outcomes, because we are passionate about success. So we don't want to leave it.
So every day is a new race. Is that what I hear?
It's every day. Every day is a new race. Mm. And I mean, I have to tell you, one of the questions I often get at conferences, live conferences, back when we used to have live conferences, I actually have had some people say to me, so what do you do during the winter? Or what do you do between races? Formula One is 365 days of the year. It's 365 races. It's every day we are pushing on the technology and the development. So those meetings during the weekend, those involve those 40 stakeholders, and those 40 stakeholders then have their departments across the business. So everyone is ultimately engaged in that relentless update. The second thing is that, of course, internally, we make sure everyone is communicated with. So, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday of a race, every employee in the business is getting updates from the racetrack. So they know exactly where we are, what's happening. You know, there's no one being left out. Everyone's in the loop. We use our internal communications folks make sure that that's possible. And then we get to some of the really interesting things, such as we have weekly town hall meetings, and those weekly town hall meetings.
Would that be 2,000 people joining that?
Yeah. And in normal times, those weekly town hall meetings happen face to face. So in the case of, and you know, I mentioned Michael Schumacher during our introduction. So let me tell you a little story about Michael. So Michael, when he joined Ferrari had not won the world championship for nearly 20 years. And so he sat down with the leadership team and they said, you know, we've got to engage everyone. We've got to get everyone on board here because, you know, we have one department making a great engine and we have another department making a great chassis and we have another department making a great gearbox. But when we bolt all these systems together, they don't work properly. And so the right hand and the left hand is not communicating in the right way. We're not building the quality of product that we need. And we somehow need to create a solution here. Formula One car is simply a technology solution. And we need everyone to contribute to that end result. So one of the things that Michael started to do was he would personally host the town hall meeting. So he would come to the factory and he would stand up on a little stage with a microphone. And he would say, good morning, everyone. So on Sunday, my car broke down on lap 5 of the race. And here is the broken component. Who designed this? And someone's hand would come up. And Michael would say, Luigi or Sophia, you know, come and join me on stage. And then this poor person would find himself standing beside Michael Schumacher and he would be saying, so why did this break? You know, why did we engineer this so that it doesn't do the job? Now, you could say that that's him blaming someone. It was not. What that was, it was Michael was driving accountability. Michael was saying to everyone in the Ferrari team, I need all of you to contribute. You need me to win the race. I need you to make a component that lasts the distance, and when you give me the world-class product, I will win the world championship. And so over time, what Michael did along with the leadership team was to build a very robust program of continuous improvement within the organization based on everyone being required to contribute. And of course, that brought pressure. Okay, that brought pressure. But the other side of that pressure is that Michael would also stand up in the meeting and he would say, I just want to thank this person for doing an amazing job last week. And he would show recognition. And so people began to feel that he really valued them. He was not some arrogant Formula One driver holding the trophy saying, this is me, this is my success. He saw it as a team success. And if any of you have watched Formula One over the years, particularly during the Schumacher era, you will know when he would jump out of the car, the first thing he would do would be to literally jump into the arms of his mechanics. Mm. And you could see all these mechanics just, you know, sometimes crying with happiness, you know, because together they had achieved success and he was recognizing that contribution. So if you fast forward to today, Lewis Hamilton does those meetings. So that factory that's 4 kilometers from my home, Lewis Hamilton goes there and he spends the morning with the workforce and he talks to everyone. And of course, people who cannot be there physically, it's being streamed to their desks wherever they are. But the point is that he's there and talking and contributing and making sure everyone feels part of the journey. And that's very powerful because it means that no one who works in a Formula One team should feel like their role is not critical. I could tell you 100 stories about failure caused by someone in the factory making the wrong decision 6 months ago. You know, so you're at a Grand Prix, you're in Monte Carlo, you're winning the race, suddenly the car breaks down. And when you do the investigation, you discover that someone in the factory 6 months ago made a poor decision. There is the reality of our business. So we need all the components on the car to work perfectly. Therefore, we need everyone in the team to work perfectly together. And that's why we spend so much time on communication, on making sure we have alignment, that there's a common goal, and that everyone is accountable for their and happy to be accountable for their contribution.
So what I hear is the magic of Formula One, it's all about people. And it's all about communication, accountability, recognition, and making sure that everyone feels like they're a valued member. Let's speak a bit about the drivers and their different roles in Formula One. We had a discussion, you and me, yesterday about the complexity and the different role of the drivers. Could you walk us through that? Because it's they're not only leaders and they're not only the ones standing driving sponsors. Their roles are quite complex.
Yeah, it's a very complex role. And actually, the great champions really become very good at all aspects of it. You mentioned, for example, you mentioned sponsors. So sponsors are our customers, not our only customers, but sponsors represent a significant customer base for us. And of course, a lot of the sponsors want to work with our drivers. So our drivers have got a big responsibility for engaging with those sponsors in a very direct way. I mean, I do a lot of work with a guy called David Coulthard, who used to drive for McLaren and Red Bull and Williams. And David and I have worked together for a long time. And David will happily tell you that when he got to the top of Formula One, he realized that he couldn't win all the races because he was competing against Schumacher and Hakkinen. And so he decided to make himself the best driver at dealing with sponsors. And he became so popular with his team and the sponsors that every time his contract came up for renewal, they wanted him to stay because they said, you are brilliant with our customers. The customers love you. So, you know, he said, I might not have been the fastest Formula One driver, but my goodness, I was the best driver at dealing with the sponsors and doing all the corporate events. And, you know, Joanna, you and I have spent our careers in marketing, you know how important it is, because if you have a brand ambassador who is amazing for your company, a global brand ambassador, you want to keep working with them. So that's definitely one aspect of it. Then there's the driving job, and the driving job itself is highly complex, as I said earlier on. And a driver has to realize that the people who have designed the car and who operate the car, that these are people who have spent years in academia. You know, they have PhDs in aeronautical engineering and computer science and software systems, and so the driver realizes that their job is to operate the product in the way that the team has devised. So they don't just jump in the car and drive it. They jump in the car with the team advising them the best how to get the most out of it. So that becomes a really big focus for them in terms of learning the complexity of that, of delivering, and all of the decisions that are made real time during a race. That they, for example, a Formula One driver doesn't simply drive the car as fast as possible. They drive the car according to the strategy that the team devises for them. Then you get into the leadership side. And as I mentioned with Michael Schumacher, you know, you think about Michael hosting the town hall meeting. I mean, he's demonstrating leadership. He's communicating. He's creating vision. He is becoming, he's personally showing recognition to people. So here you have now someone, a driver as a leader. And actually, one of my big criticisms of a lot of drivers that I've worked with is that they've been very good Formula One racing drivers, but they've not understood their role as a leader, as a visionary person within the organization who can really inspire. And you really want to infect people with your motivation. And the top drivers have a way of doing that. They are massively motivated, and their motivation is infectious. Probably not the ideal analogy in the middle of a global pandemic, but if you're going to infect someone, infect them with inspiration and motivation, not with anything else. But that's such an important role. And yesterday, I mean, a very small example, yesterday on social media, I had a message from a mechanic who works in one of the teams, and he said, "I love working here." And I said, "Well, you know, that's great. You know, really good you love working there." I said, "Why do you like working there so much?" He said, "The team boss remembers my name." And he said, "Not only does he remember my name, but he actually remembers that I've got a couple of kids. You know, my daughter likes, you know, basketball. My son likes football." And he said, like, every week he says to me, "How are the kids getting on? And how's the basketball going?" And so he said, "I really feel part of that." And again, there is a human quality, which in a very technology-based sport is so important, because the human aspect of it can become overlooked. So this is where the drivers learn all these different roles. They're a brand ambassador, they're dealing with customers, they're providing leadership, they're providing inspiration. They then have their day job to do, which is driving the car. And the champions in Formula One are very good at doing all of those things. So they have a very rounded approach to the job, and they understand that it's a lot more complex than perhaps it might seem from the outside.
So it's not only about being a good driver. That's what I, summary. No. It's all about leadership and recognition and really caring about people. But just before, we're gonna take some questions from the attendants here today as well. But before we jump into that, I want to discuss and speak about failure a bit with you, because we had a discussion the other day as well. We had in the last season of Drive to Survive, we had that painful episode where we got to watch Ferrari having their worst season ever, and you and me discussed that. And then you had this really good point of saying, in Formula One, when you learn the most, that's when you have a really tough season and you really feel hard. Could you speak more about that?
And failure.
Before we jump into this, I know that you were the one convincing Ferrari to participate, right?
yeah, that wasn't easy. The Ferrari, you know, Ferrari are very proud of their brand. It's the most, I think in 2014, there was a global survey done of brands, and Ferrari came out as the most, not only the most powerful automotive brand, but actually one of the most powerful brands in the world. And I'm sure people on the call will realize that Ferrari actually makes more money out of its brand marketing and licensing than it does out of selling 10,000 sports cars a year. So it's an incredible story. So Ferrari handing their heart to Netflix on a plate and admitting that they were having problems was a big step for them to have to do. So here's a little story. So a few years ago, we had the Malaysian Grand Prix, and Ferrari won the race. And they were not expected to win the race. So it was an unexpected victory. And the technical director at the team, there was a guy called James Allison. He now is at Ferrari. He's now at Mercedes-Benz. He's now chief technical officer at Mercedes. But he was at Ferrari at the time. And they won the race, and the team were celebrating. And of course, the television guys go running up to James, and they put a microphone under his nose, and they said, "How do you feel? You know, it's amazing you've won the race today." And I always remember his reply, because he was so shocked that, first, he was shocked at winning the race. Secondly, he was shocked to be live on television. And he said, "It's unbelievable." He said, "Because 99% of this business is misery." And everyone was laughing, like, 99% of your life is miserable. But I actually understood what he meant, because he wasn't saying it was miserable. What he was saying is, it's 99% hard work it's 1% that you're spraying the champagne and celebrating. But to get there, you have to put the hard yards in. You know, to be an overnight sensation in Formula One takes about 10 years. So it's it is hard work. And most of that work involves quite often getting things wrong. So you try something, it doesn't quite work, you learn from it. And when you have a failure, I mean, let's talk about it. When people fail, when an organization fails, you can do two things. One thing is you can all run away and hide and not discuss the problem. And what you're doing is you are guaranteeing that you're going to make the same mistakes again. Or you can sit down and say, okay, we tried our best and we really didn't deliver a good result. So how do we learn from it? And that means people being prepared to be open, honest, and respecting each other. And if you work in a Formula One team and you come into a meeting and you know that your piece of work is the reason for failure, you don't want to hide that. You actually want to share that. You want to come into the meeting and say, listen, before we talk about anything else, I need to tell you guys, that thing that we did doesn't work. We're analyzing the reasons for it. It hasn't quite worked out. Here's what we're doing to fix it. And you take responsibility for it. Now, that takes courage, and it also takes the right environment. It means that you have an environment where people are not blaming each other. People are simply empathizing, respecting, and helping each other. And you have to get that environment, because if you get that open, honest, respectful environment where you can share and learn, the whole organization starts to go up. If you start blaming each other and hiding your mistakes, the whole organization goes down. Yeah. So it's that becomes so important. So learning from learning from failure is everything. And again, I mentioned earlier on in the session that Formula One's a very data-driven environment. So the great thing about the data is every time the car is on the track, we have all this huge volume of information, and we can look at it and we can check any system to see how that system is working. And then we can sit down with the engineers, the drivers, and we can look at that data, and the data tells us where we're failing. So, you know, the suspension is not working properly, or the transmission system, or the engine, or the aerodynamics, or the driver. Maybe the driver is not working properly, in which case we see that the driver is making a mistake. So the point is, when we do those meetings every day that I talked about, we are looking at where we can improve. We're looking at our marginal failures so that we can turn them into a marginal gain.
Yeah.
And then we can gain competitive advantage. And
so if I summarize that, it would almost be celebrating failures to drive continuous improvement and encourage to share the failures, right? We need to move over to some questions now. So I think we'll have to pause this discussion. It's super interesting, but the audience is eager. Let's see here. So I got some questions. Which do you think is the better situation in Formula One and in life? An average team with a brilliant leader, or a brilliant team with an average team leader?
Good question. That's a trick question. I would always want to have a brilliant team of people, because, and actually, if you talk to Toto Wolff, he will say to you, I'm quite an average guy, but the people who work for me are brilliant. So actually, you know, an average leader who has managed to recruit a brilliant team of people is not that average a leader. They're actually pretty good. If you've got a brilliant team of people, you've made the right decisions. And actually, the best leaders in the world are flattered by their team. So their teams are doing such a great job that they make the leader look good. And
the leaders makes the team shine, right? They let them go and do their thing.
I'm sorry to turn this into the Toto Wolff half hour. But I've worked in the industry a long time. I've seen good things and I've seen bad things. And what I see from Mercedes is pretty amazing stuff. And one of the examples on my I do a podcast most years, and last September on my podcast, I had a 28-year-old Mercedes-Benz technician called Holly Chapman. And Holly, she's 28 years old. When she was 18 at school, she didn't know what she wanted to do, but she was very good at maths and physics. And so she decided to study engineering, and then she discovered this strange thing called Formula One. So she applied for a job at Mercedes, and she got the job. And 10 years later, she is the technician, the engineer responsible for the engine in the back of Valtteri Bottas's Mercedes. He is the teammate. Wow. Yeah. She is the powertrain engineer. She's 28 years old. And the first race last season, first race in 2020, Valtteri won the race. It was the Austrian Grand Prix. So he won the race, okay? So Valtteri is going onto the podium to get the trophy. And, of course, the Mercedes-Benz team, they need to have someone accept the trophy for winning the race for the team. And Toto Wolff goes over to Holly, and he says to Holly, I would like you to represent the team on the podium today. So Holly ends up getting the champagne, holding the trophy, standing between Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas. And she said to me on my podcast,
that's amazing.
She said it was the best day of my life. She said, I will never forget that day ever, ever, ever again. And she said, you know, Toto's an amazing leader. And when I asked Toto about it, Toto said, no, I'm not an amazing leader. He said, Holly's an amazing engineer. She's brilliant. She's brilliant at what she does. So there's the balance. You know, the balance is have the best possible team, and they will deliver.
Great. Thank you. Wow. Another question from the audience. What's the most important leadership lesson you've learned, and how has it proven invaluable?
Okay. So now I'm going to give a little confession. So I used to think I was a good leader when I joined the board of Jordan Grand Prix, and I was responsible for all of the team's commercial operations. And I think I had a total of 40 people in my department reported directly to me, and then I was on the management board. And I really fancied myself as a great leader, you know. I'm such a friendly guy, and, you know, I love what I do, and all that kind of stuff. But then I carried out what we call a 360 degree review, where you actually ask the people who work with you, that you ask for people's opinion of you. And I was shocked to discover that actually I wasn't that great a leader, because I kept forgetting to connect with the people who I work with on a human level. So the feedback I got, for a very small, very tiny example, was that when I used to come into the office in the morning, I was usually on my mobile, and I was like really busy, and I was looking quite serious, and I would go straight into my office and then start the first meeting and like flat out.
You were efficient.
Really. And the feedback I got was, it would be really, really nice if Mark could just say good morning, you know, even one day a week. It would be nice if he came into the office and said good morning. And I, you know, the more I looked at it, the more I realized that I had gone into this tunnel of my job, my role, my responsibility, my area. And I needed to remember that I had a team of people working for me, and that these people lived off my dynamic, the dynamic that I would bring into the office, into the working environment, into our communications. And just so that I can feel a little bit better about telling you this story, Joanna, a year ago, I did an event with Lewis Hamilton. So it was Lewis and myself together on stage, speaking for a technology company here in Asia.
Oh, wow. And I think many people joining us today would pay so much money just to see him and be on a stage with him. Yeah.
Well, it was a fantastic event, because we spent, it was like a fireside chat. It was like what you and I are doing, but it was Lewis and me talking to the audience about our learnings. And he had a very similar learning as me. So I asked him a question. I said, Lewis Hamilton, what's the one big thing that you have learned about, on your journey through Formula One? And he said, I've realized that the whole team lives off my energy level. And he said, if I come into the team feeling unhappy, grumpy about something, if I'm, I'm worrying about some other topic, he said they feed off that dynamic. So he said, I've learned the importance of bringing positive energy into your work, of making people, again, infecting people with your enthusiasm. And he said, I now consciously think about it. He said, whenever I turn up at the race, I'm sitting in my hotel room. He said, I now think, okay, I'm now going into the team. They haven't seen me for a week or 2 weeks. So I'm going to walk in there, smile. I'm going to greet them. I'm going to talk to them. And I'm going to be positive. So no matter how hard that might be for me, I'm going to make sure that I connect with them. And so I think from a leadership point of view, I learned a great deal. Again, just as the engineers are good at the mechanics of the technology, I mean, I'm very good at marketing, communications, and commercial side. I know how to run that side of a business. All of it requires people to work together to deliver that. And so from a leadership point of view, I learned a lot about that, about humility, about bringing energy. And it changed me, and it definitely changed me as a leader. And I always remember after I kind of changed my approach, I always remember a member of my staff coming to see me, and she just came into my office and she said, you're a new man. She said, whatever you've done, she said, just keep doing it because it's great. And it was nice to get feedback. And I think we all like that in business. And feedback doesn't have to always come top down. Feedback can come, bottom up. So, it brings me back to my point about the importance of our people and that collaboration and the spirit within a team.
But also, I'm thinking also the importance of feedback to actually asking your team and your employees what they think about you. Yeah. And also daring to do that and daring to change.
Yeah, but the thing is, Joanna, I thought they were all going to say, he's great, he's amazing, And they were like, well, he's sometimes he's a bit grumpy in the morning.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. Last question from the audience. Yeah. What role does technology play in disseminating information from these meetings that to other team members?
Okay, good, very good point. So here's the thing. I mean, we it's not like we don't have tools for sharing information. I mean, my goodness. I mean, you think about, Joanna, how you and I came on the call today. We can meet each other online, have a conference call. We've got each other's number for WhatsApp. We can WhatsApp each other, And in Formula One, it's exactly the same. We have all these tools for communicating. But you can't have chaos. You can't have communication flying all over the place. So the way we communicate in Formula One is, I talked about the 40 people who take part in the daily meeting. And those 40 people are split about 50-50 between people at the racetrack and people back at headquarters. And so the 20 people back at headquarters, they will come from lots of different functions and departments, and they will cascade the information down through the organization so that on a departmental level or a functional level, the detail that is relevant to those people will be shared instantaneously. So that we will use there will be, an email grouping. We have this matrix email grouping where we decide who needs to know about different things. And so that is cascaded down. Then the second thing that happens on a daily basis is that there is a daily report goes to every employee. And so therefore, if you are, if you're the security guy, or you're the lady in accounts department who's dealing with invoicing, you will know the picture of what's happened in China that day at the Grand Prix because you will be sent a communication about it. So the internal communications are very robust, but the granular detail is shared with the relevant people, and it's done instantaneously. And that's one of the beauties about the connected world that we work in, is the way in which we do that. And for your questioner, the person who asked that question, something else that's probably worth me adding. The Formula One race team never really goes back to the factory. So the cars don't go back to the factory. The cars on the team generally now are like a circus. They just travel the world. And so we are remote working the whole time. And so the factory works in the time zone of the race. And therefore, from a communications point of view, we don't send an email from the racetrack to the factory and then wait for 8 hours for someone to respond to it, because the factory is working in our time zone. So we have this very, very driven, very unified approach to making sure we're working in the moment, in the real time, delivering. And again, that's something that is just common within Formula One because of the deadlines that we work to, and the deadlines are non-negotiable. So to lose half a day because someone at the factory is working in a different time zone isn't possible. We can't have that. So therefore, we structure the way the organization communicates to make sure that everything is being acted upon with a sense of urgency, and that sense of urgency cascades throughout the organization.
Yeah, and there's no room for misunderstandings, right?
No, I mean, you raise an important point. Misunderstandings. So the two worst things that you can say in a meeting in Formula One is no one told me. Okay, no one told me, I thought that I misunderstood. Don't misunderstand. If you see something and you don't quite get it, ask the question. Go back, check, double check, triple check if you have to. I mean, we don't care. We would rather that you were boring and asked us the same question 3 times and then we get it right than you go away and assume and then you get it wrong. So again, it's about this constant focus on delivery. And if there's any uncertainty, let's take that uncertainty off the table by getting the information shared and making sure that everyone's on the same page. So again, it means being prepared to be open and respectful of each other, but it's the only way to operate. Otherwise, you don't get the right outcomes.
So communication, accountability, recognition, and it's all about people.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's time to wrap up. It's been such an interesting conversation and such a pleasure having you here. And personally,
it's been great to be part of it. Thank you.
The Grand Prix version of the Workforce Management Show. And thank you, everyone, for joining the show here today. And stay tuned for upcoming episodes and new exciting guests. Thank you so much.
Thank you.